Welcome again, and my guests tonight are Antigo.
Hi, good afternoon. Pleased to be back on.
And another returning guest, Dave Churchill. Hey, hi, Dave. Glad to have you back.
Thanks for having me back.
Glad to have you back, Antigo, before you get jealous.
I think I'm good, but glad to be here.
First of all, I'd like to ask you both, what are you up to? More specifically, Antigo, did we mention on the podcast that you completed your studies? I'm not sure exactly what was the level of the study thing you did, but if I didn't congratulate you on that, then let me officially do that now.
Oh, thank you very much. Yep. So I have all my coursework and dissertation is in from my MSc in Information Security and Forensics. With sort of an AI security research focus attached to that. I officially graduate on June 11th, but I'm currently looking at job opportunities and options. So if you have something in the AI related field and you're interested in talking with me about it, I'm open to that.
That sounds good. Also, another thing I wanted to ask, you uploaded some replays versus Purple Destiny, and if I recall correctly, that bot had some anti-human capabilities. Or were it just good against humans or a better benchmark against humans? Can you speak about that a little?
Yeah, so I've been helping Dan with Purple Destiny, which is a sort of a fork of Purple Wave that plays all three races, and it also has an anti-human specific configuration, which I think has only been done with Crazios previously. So it does a couple things that are unique. It doesn't print its stats, for example, on game start, or provide any other information to the human player that could be used to their advantage. It also, of course, quits matches early to prevent the need to kill the bot completely after games. And kind of gives a nice introduction of the bot that it prints on screen on game start. So it has some nice features like that, and also collects a bunch of data that's quite useful. So looking forward to see how that project goes. Actually, this past week, it played ZZZ0, which is sort of a semi-retired, semi-pro player, and he runs the Basel ladder. BSL ladder. He's the main admin on that site. And he seemed to be quite impressed with it. They played a best of three, and he did win all three, but one of them was very, very close and quite tight. And really looking forward to see how it does in other matches against human players in the future.
Let me brag a little, because I was the one who reached out to him and asked him to maybe try this thing out.
Mm-hmm. It's been really great to see him work on it and play it. And also, there's another person by the name of Chobo Swaggins who runs another group that has been playing quite a few games, and there's been some really great data and feedback and information there as well.
Yeah, and let's hope there will be some interest in playing versus bots, because that also drives development, I think.
Yeah, of course, with the ELO changes on Basel, where it picks the race before it plays the game. I think that Purple Destiny would be a very highly rated bot on SSC AIT and actually wins a lot of really interesting games versus high-level opponents by abusing sort of its random advantage that it doesn't really show in its ELO correctly on Basel at this current time.
All right. And speaking of SSEIT, Steamhammer has received an update recently, and it has caused some waves. It seems that Jay still has a cult following for Steamhammer and Steamhammer-related bots. I haven't got a chance yet to evaluate it, but I think it moved up a letter a little. At least its stats were improved somewhat.
Yeah, it's held its current rating and upped it very slightly by a couple of places. I think you know, people seem to think that, you know, Steam Hammer isn't improving at the rate that people would assume, but I think that the other bots are getting better month by month, and that Steam Hammer can hold, you know, a 10th to 15th level spot and has been able to do that for quite a long period of time is really very impressive. So even though it really kind of struggled to be near the top of the pack, it has seen consistent enough development to be a perennial competitor.
And also people tend to forget that the longer you have a bot, the more functions you have to modify with each new addition. Like, everything is connected to everything. And it's not because you're a bad software engineer and wrote dependent methods, but this is how the game works.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's because of bad software engineering, though.
Yeah. It can be, yes.
And it is. I don't know if the successors of Steam Hammer will update. I mean, a lot of bots have their daddy in Steam Hammer.
I'm quite excited for its underpinnings to get updated to 4.4. I think that will help both Steam Hammer itself and the derivatives greatly with the enhanced features and better security and things like that around the newer version.
Steam Hammer is the daddy and you're the wise uncle, Antiga, for some of them.
In some ways, yes.
And of course, Dan Gant is the godfather for all of us. He is Don Gant. So, Dave, switching to you, what are you up to nowadays? How is your ladder coming along?
The ladder was actually coming along. The progress we made was incredibly fast at the beginning, and then this really busy semester hit for kind of everyone involved. So my two master's students, Lucas and Rick, who were both... So Rick is the... He's been doing all the technical stuff, ladder software updates, etc., for the tournament manager software for the past 2 years. And so he... I managed to get some funding for him to work on the ladder software. And then one of my other students was working on sort of the web page interface, login, file uploading stuff. And it all pretty much is in place. We just haven't done any testing whatsoever. And the last stage is sort of the ladder scheduling isn't in place yet. So we may actually, what we may be able to do is, in the next month or so, hopefully, is enable it so people can test the uploading of files so that you'll be able to submit to this year's aid tournament through that rather than emailing me stuff. And so while the ladder may not be like completely up and running immediately, like, you know, I've been promising this for so long, it's just that, you know, these guys who are familiar with the software have a master's thesis to write, and that kind of gets in the way. And so... as I'm sure people in this chat are aware of, you know, you can't always do what you want. You have to do what you have to do in order to graduate. So, and I've just personally been busy teaching courses and doing research. So I have five master's students now, each working on completely different projects. One of them is working on StarCraft. One of them is working on multi-agent reinforcement learning for robotics. Another one is working on Prismata, the other game I wrote some AI for. And the two others are probably going to be working in some sort of offline AI tools for game development. They're just still completing their courses, so their topic isn't nailed down. And last week was my last week of classes for the term, so I won't be teaching over the summer, so I'll have more free time. And yeah, just standard academic life stuff that gets in the way of you know, software development and project updates and things like that.
I can attest to that as well. Having just finished my dissertation, the amount of time involved can be a little rough. So
I did that last year, and the PTSD is still very real from that. All right, so Dave, that sounds awesome. all of the projects you just mentioned. Can I have your life, please? It sounds like some fun projects. Speaking of ladders, maybe you're aware or just listened to the last podcast that we are trying to get together a human vs bot ladder. Did you hear about that?
Sorry, you're trying to get together what type of ladder?
A human versus bot ladder.
No, I didn't hear about that. That's interesting.
So the idea is, and we are actively working on it, is to have the average gamer available to play versus bots persistently online. But I mean, by persistent, I mean keeping track of stocks, scores, and stuff. But basically, you just pick a bot, press a button, and play against that bot. No chaos launcher, local installation, and so on and so forth.
I got to play the prototype a little bit, and I can attest that it does actually function. So,
yeah, it was surprising because basically Hannes, the other great contributor of the project, rewrote the netcode part of the StarCraft client thing or server thing. I don't remember the exact project. Maybe it was called DirectSMP, which he was working from. Anyway, he did a great job, and it worked perfectly. It was awesome. And we were surprised how good it was for a first try. Anyway,
yeah, and the latency wasn't an issue either, which I was really very impressed with. That's always a really difficult part of dealing with netcode. Netcode is actually one of the more difficult things to write correctly. So. Very impressed.
Yeah, so we are working on that when we can. Having newly exposed to the idea, what's your first impression, Dave?
It sounds really cool. I think that, like, for example, like a couple of years ago, some people from South Korea, from one of the Brood War tournaments that they have televised there, contacted me, and the entire conversation was based around, like, how do we get someone to be able to play against a bot, right? Because you got to install WAPI and run Chaos Launcher and, you know, have the multi-instance working or set up two computers, and it was a nightmare. And so, especially for non-developers, right? It was a non-trivial task to just be able to play against an AI. So just the fact that people are actively writing these sorts of tools and making this process easier, ladder or not, I think is great. And just the fact that there's a ladder on top of that is even more amazing. So that sounds really cool. This type of software development that I used to, you know, spend a lot of time writing StarCraft software, unfortunately nowadays it's like, unless the software that I'm writing is directly related to an active research project, I can't really justify that time right now. So I'm really happy that other people are spending their time on this sorts of software.
Yeah, I just decided that fuck sleep and let's do this. And it's a good point that you raised, because for the average gamer or average PC user, and I don't want to be condescending here, but even editing files is a thing that average people just don't do, and we tend to forget that as developers how much our everyday life is based on convenience when interacting with PC things. I mean, you don't have to know anything about your computer anymore to run it. It's all streamlined. And the bar is very, very, very low when the average person says that, oh, it's too technical for me.
Yeah, it is a pretty significant bar. You know, I've helped quite a few people get configured to play the bots, and and for people who aren't real technical, it's quite the challenge. And even for some that are, there's quite a few steps and different parts and pieces that all have to work correctly. So having a system that does it will be really nice. You know, there is always the issue of dealing with SCR versus 1.16. And SCR with the input changes so that keyboard clicks don't negate mouse clicks and things like that, or the other way around. And some of the other hotkey list changes, it's a little difficult to find people who are willing to play 1.16 anymore. that population shrinks all the time. But I think, you know, with the long-term goal, when we can do SCR, I think it would be really awesome.
That's the end goal, yes, definitely. But the more immediate goal is to find a good name for it, because we have a terrible one right now. it's Bladder, short for Bot Ladder. And I think that's not something I want to go public with.
That's horrible. Something I realized, like, if you have a clever name for your project, people will use it, like, regardless if it's good or not. It's just the one with the most memorable name is the one people Google and the one people use.
I think this is literally the opposite of a clever name, but yes.
It's one of those things that even if you have a development name, maybe don't tell too many people about that name, because then it'll stick and then you'll be really stuck.
Yeah, whatever you do, don't tell it on a podcast.
Yeah. Right. I won't do that. Like last time I edited out my shame, I will edit it out.
You brought up a little bit of a point there about how there's not many people playing certain versions of StarCraft anymore. And that reminded me of something completely unrelated, but really funny and probably relevant to the listeners about. So people have been asking me since like 2010, like, when will AI beat the world's best humans at StarCraft? And one of the answers that I like to give sometimes is that, well, you know, I think AI is getting closer to beating humans, but not necessarily because AI is getting better, but because humans just aren't as good at StarCraft as they used to be. Like, the era of, you know, like, Flash and Bisou and Jadong is, no one's ever going to be as good as them as they were at their prime. Like, you know, when Korean StarCraft was at its height. And I don't know, I don't follow the StarCraft 2 scene enough anymore, but like, in the first couple of seasons of StarCraft 2, when I watched kind of religiously, like, the players who were winning at StarCraft 2 were like trash at Brood War, right? And so it's kind of interesting that StarCraft as an esport just isn't where it used to be. And so we may eventually just beat humans by default. I don't know. It's kind of sad in a way.
I think I think when SCR first came out and the pro scene sort of just barely restarted, I think there was a really good argument that the pro players at the time, say 3-4 years ago, were worse than they were during the major competitive tournament days. I'm not so sure that's the case now. With the advent of optimized hotkeys for professional players, and now they're going to have this keyboard blockout issue resolved, I think the play level is going to be on par or better. And we're seeing APMs actually rise on average among the pro pool. So because of the allowances that SCR gives with the higher frame rates and things like this, you can put more commands into it before they start dropping out and you have to repeat them. So the level of precision, the level of execution, I think is on par or better, in my opinion.
But is that due to updates in the game client? Like, for example...
Yeah,
If the following scenario was possible, like, if you took my playing Brood War, and if you could make a map that was playable in both Brood War and StarCraft 2, like, if I had the StarCraft 2 interface, I would have been way better with that interface, because I could do a bunch of things, like hotkey buildings and just hold down A and make 1,000 Marines, right? And so, do you truly believe that, like, the height of the Gosus of Brood War, people are actually that good, or people are better now because the game is like the interface is updated or something?
I think that, you know, really high level tournaments breed competition, and the more of them there are and the more money there is involved in it, the more dedicated players are and the higher the competitive level is. And I think it would be really hard to argue that the competitive level now equals what it was 7 or 8 years ago. The money involved is maybe 15-20%. The amount of players involved is much less. And so in that aspect, Perhaps not. However, like you're saying, you know, the game client has changed. And even though you don't have infinite unit selection and things like this, the game client runs at a much higher frame rate. It misses commands far less often. It doesn't block out commands in strange ways. You can run the hotkeys however you want. And these have allowed increases in player skill. And there's also been some technical revolutions in analysis and statistics that are going into advising players. And so you see far less misses in terms of economic decisions at the higher levels nowadays than you used to. And also there's been some strategy sort of increases in understanding that a player today, even a fairly decent one, I think would cream a player 7 to 8 years ago, even though they would be probably be of less actual playing skill. It's because the strategic understanding has changed over time and become better, and in combination with changes with the game client. So I would argue that a player today would beat a player back then by a fair margin. It wouldn't be close.
You're talking about, you mean like the average player or the world champion?
The world champion of today is much better than the champion of back then in terms of what they can do with the game client and the engine and their actual performance. In terms of them actually have a higher level of player skill, that's kind of hard to judge. We're talking about mechanical skill, or we're talking about strategic development. And I think in terms of strategic development today is much farther along, but in terms of mechanical skill, it's perhaps less. So it really sort of depends. You know, I don't think you have people that have the similar sorts of reaction speed, and, you know, all the professionals of today are a lot older. But there have been other developments that have pushed things along as well. So it's complicated. There's not an easy answer here.
Yeah, it's really cool to hear because, like, fully admittedly, I haven't even installed the remastered version of StarCraft yet. I haven't played a single game of it. So mm-hmm. I'm very behind on what's been happening. So it's cool to hear that, and it's nice to know that my fear, well, not fear, but the hypothesis is not going to come true, that eventually we'll just beat the world's best human because of the lack of interest in the game rather than because of the advance of AI.
Yeah. Something else that does affect AI is that the StarCraft Brood War game engine, of course, you've dealt with this and so have I, is that really once you get past about, you know, 50 to 60,000 APM that you're putting through the game engine, stuff starts to fall apart really quick. It just won't ingest any more than that without dropping commands. And having dealt with SCR and played with testing tools with the game engine, it'll ingest 5 to 6 times that, probably around 300,000 commands.
Yeah, but so something that's really important to note for people who may not be that familiar technically with AI and APM, is that those APM numbers are completely conflated and don't actually mean anything. Because mm-hmm. if you have 200 units, right, that's the maximum number of units you can have, unless you're talking about 400 Zerglings, right? If you have mm-hmm. 200 units, each one issuing a command every frame, because it doesn't make sense to issue more than that, Brood War running at 24 frames per second on fastest speed, that's 4,800 APM,
mm-hmm.
right? Oh, sorry, times 60. I'm an idiot. That's per second. Yeah, so times 60, so the maximum effective possible APM of issuing 200 units, one command per frame for 60 times per second is 280K APM,
mm-hmm.
right? And so realistically, so we ran into this back in the day as well, all the arguments about bot APM. Like, mm-hmm. our UAlberta bot had something like 40,000 APM when it started out. People were like, oh my God, 40,000 APM. But then all I did was write a filter that said, if the previous command is the exact same command as the current command, don't send the current command. Right? Yeah. So what was happening was I was trying to move all of my units to a particular location on the map, and it was just spam right-clicking. All 100 units were all sending the command to go to this location. And then I said, okay, if the unit's previous command was also the current command, don't send it. And the bot's APM went down to like 400. Mm-hmm. Right. And some bots operate extremely low APMs because of this. And so I think that, you know, if any bot simply implemented this sort of filtering of their commands that don't actively help it, then all bots APMs would effectively go under 1,000, like pretty much, unless you're doing like Muta Micro, where yes, you can dance back and forth really quickly. But like the Brood War engine, past a couple of thousand APM is just blowing up internally anyway. So, when talking about APM, you got to realize that like a lot of that APM is completely useless. Absolutely, completely useless.
Yeah, I know. I've been around this quite a lot in the discussions around it and ways to deal with it as well. And, you know, it's just a note that the limits of what the game engine can take in SCR are, in fact, higher. And so there may be things that could be done within that that increase performance. Whether that's possible or not on a practical level, I don't really know, because we don't have SCR that we can use at this point for bot development.
Reflecting back on the glory days of StarCraft Brood War and SCR, I think you are both right, but people, old Brood War champions, fundamentally played a different game, because they had to accommodate like the keyboard mouse command drop thing. They probably overspammed commands, and you don't need to necessarily do that anymore. A good analogy would be, imagine an Olympic fencer and an old swordmaster from the Middle Ages. I'm pretty sure the Olympic fencer will beat the swordmaster in a fencing match. But in a real duel, the swordmaster will fucking kill him without a sweat. So it's a similar thing that the swordmaster had to deal with a lot of things that were unrelated to the core of the issue. You had to battle the game itself at some point. Not unlike we have to battle BWAPI day to day. And I think that's not a good comparison. And it's hard to say that today's top gamers versus top gamers of the old, because as you said, the scene is different, so it's not sure it's an apt comparison.
But yeah. Well, something that's really interesting is about a week ago, Jadong did an interview that you can find online. I don't remember where it's at. I have to go look. But basically what he said was, in the old Brood War in SCR, prior to the patch that only came out on the PTR realm about a week and a half ago, he trained himself to do every single command twice to make sure that when the engine skips or misses a command, that what he asked it to do actually executes. And when you watch him play, he does this. He does every single command twice, and it's crazy, right? Because he had to do this because the game engine itself was inefficient and would miss commands. And with this new PTR patch, he's only having to do commands once because the miss rate is much, much lower. So that effectively doubles his ability as far as reaction time without having to do all this extra overhead, which is a major developmental change in how players interact with the game. It's massive.
I would agree with you, but I would argue the doubling, because just like right clicking twice isn't the same as making a new decision and doing something else, right? Like right. You're probably making it 20% better or something.
Right. But it should be an effective performance difference. And he was talking about it in the interview. He says, we're never playing anything past this Pestown Testron version back again. It will be the version going forward, and because of this,
is that the remastered version or
the SCR? About a week ago, had a public test realm patch that resolves the input blocking issue with mouse and keyboard, and that's what he's talking about. And that is not live on the SCR servers yet, but as of about a week ago, that came out, that fix, and it's been a problem for 15 years. You know, so. A recognized one, and it should really make things easier for professional players, and hopefully in some ways it probably increased the skill level.
I'm being pedantic here, but when you say 15 years, do you mean 20, or did it specifically come around in like 2004?
I think it's been a bug since release. I think.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So 1998, you know, it's been an issue where, you know, if you held down the keyboard or mouse, one or the other commands wouldn't execute correctly. So finally fixed 20 years later. Wow, we're really fast.
Better late than never. And speaking of the bot ladder, advising and coaching is one of the goals of this. If you have an easy way to play against the bot, I would argue that it makes sense to have a bot that brings you up to a level. And of course, it will not train pro players. I think we are not that level yet. But to train a mediocre to good player, and you have to, you don't have to start at the very bottom. That can be done with a bot.
There is the Coach AI project that's developed. I can't remember the developer's name off the top of my head, but it's available on Team Liquid Forums and you can find it, which is specifically designed to coach humans. And it is a very interesting training tool.
Yeah, we briefly mentioned it, I think. Not very widely used, I think.
No, it's sort of an edge case, and being restricted to 1.16, like we've been talking about, really restricts its feasibility for current training.
Yeah. So one of the test names I came up with was Artificial Violence Really Insane League, because the abbreviation is AVRIL. So that's also stupid, but at least not as stupid as Bladder.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you still need to come up with a better name.
Yeah, we are working on it. So, in other AI news, I just read about this, but NVIDIA has entered the StarCraft scene somewhat. They have a project called SMAC, which is StarCraft Multi-Agent Challenge. Did you hear about this, or should I explain it a little bit more detail?
I was reading the article before the cast that I think you sent, so other than that, I hadn't heard it until I was started reading.
Yeah, it's a relatively new, it's a 5 days old article. So it is exactly what it sounds like. It's a multi-agent reinforcement learning challenge, and it's related to StarCraft II Micro. And if you want to know more, just Google it. But the important thing that another big company is expressing interest in StarCraft AI. And I think that's good news for us too, even though this is StarCraft II.
I'm a little more pessimistic about this, because it seems to me like, I don't know. I don't want to upset anyone at NVIDIA, but it seems to me that like this article is kind of NVIDIA saying, hey, everyone else is doing StarCraft, we should do something. And so here's a couple of reinforcement learning benchmarks. Go play with it. Like, they didn't do anything, really. I mean, it's not a new bot. It's not like the level of DeepMind or what Facebook was doing even. And I mean, this kind of stuff gets to me, where the conclusion is the StarCraft multi-agent challenge represents a first step toward the development of agents which are able to reason over these types of problems. Like, it's not a first step. It's the 789th step, right? It is not the first step in terms of StarCraft. It's not the first step in terms of GitHub projects which give challenges. It's not the first step with regards to deep reinforcement learning. It's not the first step with regards to multi-agent reinforcement learning. It's not the first such package that has been released in the last 2 years. Like, there's so many things that have come before this, and I think NVIDIA just wanted the ability to say, hey, we're the first at something. And that's kind of annoying from an academic point of view, because DeepMind got better at this, but at first they were also saying, hey, look at us, we're providing StarCraft as this big AI challenge. We're the first people to do this. And we're like, no, you're not. Please don't say you are. And in the last year or so, they've gotten much better at recognizing things that came before. But I don't know. To me, it smacks of public relations. But having new benchmarks and algorithms out is great. I just don't think that this is like, whereas Google is trying to make a StarCraft II agent be as good as possible, I don't think NVIDIA is going to come even close to ever trying to make a StarCraft II agent.
Yeah. And really what they've developed is a way to do combat simulation on a flat map board from looking at their examples. And really that's something that's been, people have done on the StarCraft side for 7-8 years now. That's
not so only that, but like there are papers I could get a citation out. Actually, one of my recent papers cited it. So Facebook AI research literally had this, but in Brood War with Torchcraft 3 or 4 years ago.
Right.
Yeah. It's exactly the same thing, right? They had the benchmark maps, they had the tests, they had their multi-agent reinforcement learning solution. They had it all. It just, I don't know if their marketing was worse or if people just didn't like Brood War as much, but they had this for Brood War several years before anyone else was on the scene. So it's unfortunate that, you know, they don't get that sort of recognition, in my opinion.
Yeah, it really is, you know, I don't know.
And just as a disclaimer, this is not me advocating Facebook as a company, but the people at their AI research have been extremely active releasing tools and stuff for the Brood War community. And,
their
AI group is absolutely amazing and not at all representative of like some of the crazy stuff that Facebook as a whole company has done in the past.
Mm-hmm. It's really been awesome. The amount of projects and time, and you know, they're essentially paying in partial for development of BWAPI 5. You know, it's really been nothing but excellent. So,
yeah, and people tend to forget that Facebook is a big company now, and a lot of people's departments and everything, and the right hand does not know what the left hand does. And it's like going to some big evil corporation and beating up the receptionist because he must be responsible for the company's doing. It's nonsensical. But
there is also that argument from the movie Clerks, right? Where the people who died on the Death Star knew the risks when they signed up to build the Death Star. So, you know, there's arguments for both sides.
Yeah, but that's a good point. But maybe when they signed up, they didn't find Facebook that blatantly evil as the Galactic Empire, which did bring order to the galaxy and provide stable jobs for 20 years, I might add.
But yeah, I like obviously what NVIDIA is doing is good. It is never bad to have more things. I just don't think some of the hype I've seen around people saying, hey, you know, is the NVIDIA going to be competing with DeepMind? I don't think that is the case whatsoever. I honestly believe that NVIDIA is just trying to sell more graphics cards.
Of course, but I'm not angry about this. I mean, if they sell more graphic cards, but on advanced AI forward, I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm. And sort of in relation to that, NVIDIA is the only graphics card company that has really made it possible to run some of these machine learning things on it, on their systems, and they tend to support it really well. You know, having dealt with Facebook's bot and playing with its systems and stuff, you know, the 10,000 series of cards work great, as well as the new models, and don't really seem to have very many issues. So that, at least on the back end, it seems to support the solutions on the hardware side quite well. So.
Oh yeah, I mean, NVIDIA and their graphics card has made so much possible. It's insane, right? Like, I wrote a small article recently about all this and how, you know, essentially, I won't get into that story, too much for the podcast, but it's very interesting how the development of PC video games led to the drive for this market of 3D acceleration, because, you know, first-person shooters were really nice, like Doom and Quake and all that, and the 3D graphics cards, in order to drive more pixels to a screen, they had to have parallel processors, and those parallel processors made like all of these industries possible, like cryptocurrencies and like deep learning, like on these video cards. It's all possible because of like video games and how amazing that is and how fun that is. And NVIDIA, obviously, you know, a world-leading company in that. And I didn't, none of my statements were meant to like talk bad about them or what they're doing. It's just that I think some of the hype I've been seeing about it is probably not the direction they're going in. And B, their probably innocent claim that this is a first step is a little annoying to people who've been doing this for 10 years.
It's perfectly valid to have an opinion of a company as long as it's expressed in a somewhat respectful way. That's my opinion. I mean, feel free to disagree or hate on them. Just don't do it like a YouTube comment section does.
And no, I have no ill feelings toward NVIDIA, so please don't take any of my criticism of this particular announcement as that.
And feel free to talk about it, because first of all, it's a topic dear to my heart, because I adore, maybe idolize is a strong word, but I like very much the period, the mid-90s, where Doom and those things were all the rage, and the developers were rock stars, sometimes quite literally, and they were making amazing things with the hardware available. And it started a cycle that you just mentioned. So, speaking of hardware things, I wanted to bring up a point. There is this, Google has this TPU hardware, which is, I think, Tensor Processing Unit, which is very useful for machine learning, and it helps with, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it helps with deep learning stuff on the hardware level. I might be wrong about this, but it is machine learning related. And it seems to me that this is getting closer and closer to the point when the average consumer can access or afford it. Currently, you can't really buy it, you can just rent TPU processing time, but still, it's something maybe we should look forward to.
Yeah, I think it's essentially just like a hardware-specific implementation that allows TensorFlow to be run on it. But I'm not 100% sure because I haven't looked at it. But it's essentially, you know, the equivalent of however many hundred GPUs in one processor that just, it's able to be more efficiently constructed because it only runs like a subset of, it's not a general purpose computer. It runs a specific, it's like designed for neural nets as opposed to a GPU, which is used for neural nets, but not designed specifically for it.
Yeah, it's not really a new concept. There's, you know, as you go from general purpose hardware to more specific industry or software-related hardware, there are quite a few advantages that come from doing that. And one of them is you get more computational power as you focus on a smaller subset of tasks. And ASICs have been around for 20 years, and it's sort of just a logical development along those lines.
Absolutely. And I think there might be a possibility that our bots will use this. I mean, I think AlphaStar had TPUs in its development, but I'm quite not sure about that.
It definitely did use TPUs for its training. But as far as I know, the running of it, like once it was trained, running the model to actually play the game, I believe was on like a standard desktop machine.
Yeah, I don't actually know that. I would love to speak with the DeepMind guys one day. And Dave, I'm really, really can understand your outrage about this, how academia is treated sometimes, because it is my impression that academia sometimes paves the way for new development. You work on it until it can be profitable, and then companies take over and just say they invented it.
Yeah, I would say it's, you know, like 5 or 6 years ago, I was outraged, but now I'm just mildly annoyed and speak my mind.
Feel free to. It's valid criticism.
It happens in a lot of industries, though. You know, academia starts a project, works on something for quite a few years, and then, you know, corporations sort of cherry pick ideas and developments from that and develop them into products. It's sort of been that way forever. It's just often nice if they recognize how that occurred in that process.
Yeah, but it's not a problem that they do it. Like you said, it's the recognition that hurts the most, probably. I mean, basic research is literally done for this purpose, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, it's just PR, right? They want to promote their products, and again, the people writing those press releases, 99% of the time, have never been in the same room with the researchers. And so they've been given some overview of the project. They have a set of buzzwords that they're going to use that work really well with the press, and they release them, and that's that. And like some very small amount of people, like, you know, the dozen or so people who were working on StarCraft AI for a long time, get upset, but that's not any amount of people for them to really be worried about, right? It's just slightly annoying, that's all. So I completely get where they're coming from as a company. And also, I mean, as an academic, you have to understand that in the rare case, and StarCraft AI is one of these rare cases where, like, in academia in the past decade, something that was like, you know, a hobby project of 20 or so researchers became this big thing that companies are now working on. And if you're lucky enough, in my opinion, I was lucky enough to work in an area that became really popular. Of course, if you're one PhD student working on a thesis for a few years, and then a $1 billion company picks up the project and starts doing research on it, of course they're going to blow you away and have all sorts of hardware and stuff, right? So it's, I think of that as a good thing, because it shows that what you were working on actually helped set up the foundation for something that was useful for people in real life. And so often in academia, you're doing important research, but you may not, like, the real world importance of that may not be seen for decades or 100 years, right? If you prove some random theorem for your thesis in like abstract algebra, maybe that doesn't like rear its head in an application for a long time. And that doesn't mean it's not important. It's just that in AI recently, we've been lucky enough to see like, oh wow, this is actually, you know, all these abstracts where we're saying this stuff can be used in real life is actually coming true, and that's pretty cool.
It is really amazing to see, you know, really academic groups have often very limited resources. And I remember, you know, a few months ago we were doing napkin math on how much the AlphaStar training time costs, and it ran into the hundreds of millions. You know, it was crazy. And so it's really interesting what happens when they can throw those sorts of money numbers at things.
I want to say they burn the money, but I think if you make a pile and literally burn money, that would be a slower consumption rate.
Probably.
Yeah, I've heard other estimates that were probably tens of millions. I don't know about hundreds of millions, but like you take 40 researchers conservatively making very conservatively making £200,000 a year, and that's $8 million for 1 year of salary, let alone anything else, right? So you take one grad student making hopefully 30K a year if they have really nice funding. And like, for example, in the beginning, StarCraft AI was more a software engineering task than it was an AI task. Just having the thing not crash all the time was really important, right? So you take even one AI researcher and one software engineer, and you have two people now instead of one, and I think the system you get out is way more than twice as good as either of them could have produced. So if you get people in all sorts of different parts of software engineering and testing and AI development and hardware development, and you put them all in one room, like five separate experts, they're going to come up with a system that's way better than five times any individual could have made. And so you get these like exponential gains because of the combined knowledge over just like a single grad student.
I think, a software developer and a computer scientist, basically. And an AI expert. And or. I always like to harp on the fact that computer science and software development are very different things. That's just like a pet peeve of mine. All right, another question about AWID 2019. You maybe saw the question. It's about the game speed slider in the game lobbies. But feel free to speak about AWID in general.
I saw that, and I believe we answered it. And I can't remember the exact question or the exact answer, but it was Rick actually took on that. I think for the last competition, something had happened where we said it was on fastest speed, but it actually wasn't. And that had an effect that I was unaware of like some latency thing in the game actually was like a couple of milliseconds off. And so what we did, I believe, the real answer to this is all on the GitHub issues, I think, where it was answered, and on Facebook. And thanks to Chris Cox and Dan Gant and all those people for bringing it up, was that I think despite what we had claimed and kind of admitted that it was wrong, we just went with whatever we had been going with because that's what people had been testing on. Because the software was always available to test, regardless of what we thought was happening, you could just try it. And I think that's what had happened, is that either Chris or Dan ran it and saw that it wasn't what we had said. And we said, okay, well, it's kind of too late because we would affect everyone negatively if we changed it. And so we just went with what we had done. But that's so far out of my mind right now. I apologize if I got any of that wrong.
Some outside perspective on it a little bit. So LF6 is fastest and LF3 is normal speed in 1.16. And actually, probably for the last 3 to 4 years, I've really advocated for tournaments to be run on fastest instead of LF3 and then sped up once they get into end game, because that's what all the humans were playing on latency wise. However, in SCR, Blizzard has made improvements to the latency that's involved. And actually, in SCR, the latency is closer to LF3 than it is to LF6 now currently for local LAN games. So what's been being played right now at the professional level is sort of right in between those two, which sort of makes it difficult to like take a stance and say that, you know, they should be on fastest or it should be on LF3 and then moved up. My opinion on it has been more to try and replicate it as closely to what will be the future SCR levels as is reasonable. Hopefully that gives a little bit of thought on it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all in favor of just keeping it the same if it doesn't affect people like really, really badly. But I know that like the Facebook bot, for example, had trained models. And if those models are trained on a different latency, then obviously that is super bad. Versus a lot of the rule-based bots, like it really wouldn't affect them that much. Like UAlberta bot, I don't even know if it would have an effect. Maybe I'm one pixel to the left or something, but none of my logic really depends on that anyway. And I've gotten a couple of questions about, you know, like updating UAlberta bot to be 4.4 and updating the tournament. And so we are going to support 4.4 in the fall because it's easy to support a new thing. It's just a new zip file, which is really, really simple. But in terms of like updating the bot and all this kind of stuff, I'm just kind of hoping that like we get Wappy for remastered eventually, so then I can just update everything for that instead of having to update this and updating that, because it's a huge time investment. Like, just imagine updating your entire bot and then having to do it again, and then, you know, having several other projects that you're working on at the same time. So I don't know the status of any of that. If you guys know the status of any of that, that would be awesome. Because I think you had Adam on the podcast a little while ago.
Yeah, last week, actually.
Did he talk about that at all?
Not that time, I believe, but he might have talked, because that was the second time I had him.
Okay.
From what I've heard, BW API 5, it really just depends on the amount of work and effort that's put into it. And, you know, currently there's really only a couple of people working on it, and only some of them are being paid. And really, if it needs to be done faster, people need to dedicate resources, money, and time to it.
Yeah, I was told like that. Things. I think I was told at some point in the past that if it was to be officially supported by Blizzard, then they would have to do it in like a non-DLL injectable way, sort of like how StarCraft 2 1 was done. But that makes it all slower. Like, obviously, it's way better for Blizzard if you don't have people literally writing code injection for your engine
right.
and make a profit off of. And so if they did it in a similar way to SC2, then maybe they could reuse some of that architecture, and then maybe you could have, you know, one bot that's a client that's completely separate from the game that plays both games and doesn't even know. Like, that sort of thing, like, for general AI is really, really cool if they could do that. But at the same time, then you're losing a lot of the speed of what Wappy has now. But is anyone really taking advantage of that speed in any way? Like, are people doing a lot of machine learning in Brood War that the speed is really necessary for? I don't know. The only people I know doing global learning were DeepMind and Facebook, and I'm not even sure if Facebook's bot is going to be entered again in the future. So... yeah, that was pretty rambly, but hopefully that, you know, I'll say this. If there's ever a Wappy update for remaster, I would put a plan in place to eventually switch AI IDE completely over to remaster and just scrap the 1.6 stuff we have now. Because maintaining both would be impossible, and the people who were serious about it, I'm sure, would want to go to remaster for all the reasons that you were mentioning earlier.
Yes.
Yeah. So now, if this came out a month before the tournament, I'm sure we'd have one final tournament, you know, current version. But as long as there was like 6 months or more for everyone to be able to port their bots over, then I would definitely go ahead and just say, okay, it's remaster only. Not only that, but that might reinvigorate me to like actually update you Alberta bot for the first time in a long time. Whether or not people would actually... So I thought that, you know, you Alberta bot, no one was using it anymore because of things like Steamhammer, right? So in my opinion, Steamhammer is just a better version of you Alberta bot. But also, I've been told by people that bots like Steamhammer, while they have more features, they also have more baked-in strategy. And so it's kind of harder to modify Steamhammer to do what you want versus UAlbertaBot, which has like absolutely no strategy in it almost. It's kind of easier to strip less strategy out. So like when Saida used UAlbertaBot as the base, I was shocked that they didn't use Steamhammer, but they said basically it was because they could change it to do whatever they wanted, right? And so I would want to, like, Steamhammer has some great features that I've wanted to put back into UAlbertaBot. Like, you know, being able to say build this at a particular location or build 5 drones instead of having the list drone 5 separate times and like a ton of bug fixes that have just been there forever. But looming for the last year is this, I don't want to say threat, but possibility of moving to remaster. And I'm certainly not ever going to spend all that time coding up all this stuff for 4.4 if 5 is just around the corner. So that's why I kind of want to know like what's on the go, and I'm sure every bot developer does too.
Yeah, everybody wants to know, and the problem is we don't really know. It's likely that Blizzard will perhaps do their own project, which they really don't have a lot of confirmation of what level of interest that they've put out on this. And they've said that they're interested and they want to do it, but it's going so slowly, and there have been really not a lot of crosstalk as to what their plans are. And on the BW API 5 side, you know, realistically, I don't, you know, if I was to guess, just from looking at the development pace and stuff and the things they need to do, it's not happening within, you know, 9 months, I don't think. You know, it's really a 9 month to 2 years probably out, unless there's a lot more developers, a lot more time, and a lot more money spent.
Yeah, just to add to that, like even the StarCraft, so here's, okay, what am I allowed to say? Sorry, I've had a couple of NDAs. So okay. After that one ended, yes. So I believe I was publicly told that, like, so when the StarCraft II stuff hit the scene, right, when, you know, I wrote Command Center over that summer and released that, and the PySC 2 stuff came out, and everyone was super excited, and Blizzard and DeepMind worked together, and it seemed like, wow, they're all in with this, and it's really, really cool. And they were for a period. And then we had at BlizzCon, there was that AI meetup where, you know, there was a lot of enthusiasm about it. And like, I literally sat down with at least two people from Blizzard, and we drew out, like, on a napkin or whatever, the features that specifically I needed to run a StarCraft II aid tournament. And that feature list was quite small. It was essentially the ability to play an AI controlling one StarCraft II instance that I could connect to another game via IP or lobby or whatever. And so what happened was, apparently, this is the thing that I was unsure if I was allowed to say, but I'm pretty sure I am, was that internally after BlizzCon and sort of like the success of the launch of it, Blizzard started some other project, and the people who were working on the API internally just got shifted. And so it went from maybe three or four people working on it to like one person working on it. And yeah. So, and that was on a successful, really appreciated project. So then like that was a huge deal, and they still took people away from it. And so if now it's WAPI 5, which is this like thing that relatively nobody cares about, how many resources are they devoting to that? Well, I have no idea. But and I actually have no idea, because I haven't spoken to anyone from Blizzard in a long time. But I can only imagine that it's not a lot.
Yeah, we do know that the entire SCR remastered staff at Blizzard is like five guys or less. I think it's actually like three. It's not much,
which is,
and they have to do everything,
which is insane, because StarCraft remastered popularity is actually rising, and not slowly. I mean, people just love the game.
It's still, you know, it's still a small portion in comparison to the other projects, and their income from it is not super high. But you know, we are really appreciative of the work that they do put in. But you know, of course, any group that's dependent on a larger entity to do different aspects always wants more, and so do we.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, I've bought every Blizzard game ever made, every expansion of every Blizzard game ever made. I've had like a World of Warcraft subscription since 2004 or whenever it came out. But, and you know, there's like Activision Blizzard, and people like to hate on it and stuff, but there was no reason for them to make StarCraft Remastered. There was no financial reason for them to do that. They did that because someone at Blizzard loved the idea and loved the game and knew that like a handful of people would really love that. And I'm sure that they didn't make money on it. Like maybe they did, but not millions of dollars, not enough to like warrant the doing of it. So yeah, me saying all this is not like shitting on Blizzard. They did an amazing thing. It's just, you know, explaining why that probably we cannot get a firm date on, okay, here's when BWAP5 will be released, because understandably so, it cannot be a financial priority for them. Unlike the StarCraft II DeepMind thing, which I'm sure, you know, the press that they got from that had renewed interest in AI and StarCraft II, that WAPI just simply won't have that level of impact on a global scale.
But keep in mind that Blizzard and Google are operating on a different scale. So
no, what I mean is that I think that now that the StarCraft II stuff has been released, the priority of something to work in remaster is less. That's all.
Mm-hmm. And realistically, this has been talked about on this podcast before, is that, you know, while Boudoir, of course, in our opinion, it has some eccentricities and things that make it slightly more difficult of an AI-based challenge, realistically, a bot, if a team can do the work to beat a professional level player in either game, within a few months, they could probably do it with the other one, and they get to that point. And so there's some analogous aspects to that challenge.
Yeah, and just to add on to that, I think that the annoyances with the Brood War engine, which we're all familiar with, versus the StarCraft II engine, I think that those annoyances only exist because we are trying to incorporate human knowledge into our one-person team bots, right? Mm-hmm. If you took AlphaStar and applied it in the same way to Brood War, it would get just as good just as quickly because it just learns what to do. It doesn't know that units are getting stuck. It doesn't get frustrated by stuff like that, right? It just chooses the actions that don't get stuck. And so, you know, that AlphaStar algorithm, if you had the same PySC1 or PySC Brood War interface, would probably learn the game just as well. Like, the games are strategically identical from an AI point of view. And so the only annoyances that really exist in Brood War are because we are trying to do things like manually program kiting algorithms. And so we need to know, like, frame stoppage numbers and stuff like this, sort of thing that, given enough compute, machine learning doesn't even care about.
Mm-hmm. Can't really argue with that. And as Batman taught us, the best superpower is money. So, yeah.
Yeah, there's actually, for anyone listening, and for you guys too, so Rich Sutton, who's like the grandfather of reinforcement learning from the University of Alberta, just wrote a little article called, what is it? Let me get the article name. The Bitter Lesson, it's called. And the bitter lesson in AI research is essentially that you kind of just wait for hardware to be strong enough. Like, these algorithms have been around a long ass time, and we just finally built a computer big enough. And not only that, but all of our efforts to build human knowledge into AI systems have, within a few years, been completely caught up and overtaken by orders of magnitudes of skill by more general algorithms with more compute, right? It happened in chess, it happened in checkers. Well, checkers is different because checkers was solved. But, like, it happened in chess, it happened in Go, it's going to happen in StarCraft if it hasn't already, where all of our efforts to put in, okay, if this strategy, then do this, if these units are on screen, then do this, is just going to be stomped by a more general AI that has, you know, a significant amount of hardware behind it.
And I think what you've touched on here is something that's really critical, is that when you start looking at the algorithms that are being used in these aspects for the StarCraft bots, actually, if you trace them back, some of them were designed 30 or 25 years ago. You start digging into the articles and came out of academia way back then, but they didn't have the computing power to do what they can today with them. And it's really a fascinating read when you go down that rabbit hole.
It's not even the first hype cycle we are living with AI. I just read about this, but I had confirmed that independently as well. It's at least the third time that everyone is excited about AI again. And this time we have a significant computing advantage, but who knows how long this will last.
Yeah, just less than a decade ago, it was the Monte Carlo tree search hype.
Yeah.
And before that, you know, there was Deep Blue back in the 90s, and oh my God, alpha beta search is going to cure cancer and all this kind of stuff. It's comes around all the time. And here's the thing. I'm an AI researcher who's not interested in deep learning. And that's kind of like this huge oxymoron, because it's the thing, it's the hot new thing, right? And I'll use it if my students are interested in it, but like, who knows what's going to be good in the future? If everyone puts all their eggs in the one basket of deep learning, then that's not necessarily research, in my opinion. And so I, not only that, but there are just things that deep learning cannot do, right? And not only that, but there are things that deep learning can do that people cannot apply it to. Like, how is some indie game that like has four people going to implement AlphaStar for their game, right? They don't have millions of dollars of compute or all these technical people to like build and train and test the neural nets. They need algorithms that are like small and compact and do something good with a little bit of CPU and a little bit of memory. And that's actually the things that I'm more interested in, is sort of, you know, can I run this AI on a Raspberry Pi? I don't know, because not everyone is Google. And so not only are there these bubbles, but I think, you know, that the deep learning is extremely popular now, and it's done so much so well that it will probably be the best thing going forward for a long time. But there will be a bubble of deep learning, and then there will be another method, you know, that overtakes it in the future, probably.
And it actually interconnects with another really interesting argument, is that when AI is only possible for people who have tens of millions of dollars, an entire research team, and enormous data centers, and only those people have AI, does it unfairly allocate power and ability in sort of an ethical way? And it's a real concern among the AI research community, and I think you are very wise to be focusing on smaller implementations.
Not only that, but the people who have this power are certainly not releasing the full details of their algorithms, nor open sourcing their code, right? Nor should they. I mean, I hate the idea of software patents. I can't stand it when people keep secrets, but I understand that if you invest $10 billion in something, you're probably not just willing to give it away, right? That's just it. But then again, you have things like OpenAI wrote this article generator that they feel could like weaponize fake news, and they decided not to open source that, even though they're a not-for-profit research institute, supposedly. So, yes, well, not always have money and inequality, but it's also inequality on the algorithm side.
Yeah. Right?
Not only can you implement it, but nobody else can think of that, because the entire budget of my country's academic institutions lies within one company.
And also, you know, there's some real concerns about OpenAI. They just announced that they're restructuring into a cap-for-profit instead of a nonprofit company structure. And there's some concerns coming up about that as well.
Yeah, I don't know enough about businesses to really know what that means, so I can't comment on it.
And reflecting back to your point, I think as a software developer, I can relate to your point, because people vastly undervalue the importance of finding out what does not work. So even if you spend 10 years on a project or a research just to find out, okay, this is not the way, that is immensely important. Mm-hmm. And it's not useless work, quite the opposite.
You're getting into problems in dealing with academia, and you know it's almost impossible to do a research project for something that, or test a previous project, or research into something to make sure that it doesn't work, for example. It's almost impossible to get funded to do that sort of stuff, and it's really unfortunate that that is the case. Well, let's talk about AIST Season 3 here for just a moment. So I have, after the experiences of running the past season and things like this, gotten to the point where I'm committed that going to publish source for the next one. That's going to be available. If your bot enters, it will be published. So if you don't not okay with that, don't enter. And I'm committed for 4.4 BW API or later. You have about 9 months to prepare for that. I'm not going to allow any versions that are earlier than that, specifically so that we can time client-based bots, as well as take advantage of the other security-based improvements with the newer versions of the API.
I think nine months is a long enough grace period.
Yeah, I tried to put all that out there as early as possible so that people get a chance. If you don't have it in your plans to upgrade to 4.4 later, you need to do it. So you've been warned.
Oh yeah, I wanted to ask Antigua, I saw your bot on the ladder. Did you have a bot before? Because I saw it on the broadcast, but I was not sure that that was you or your bot that Nepeta casted before.
Or bot. Oh, so I've had a bot on and off the ladder for 2 or 3 years, some of which have been custom written by me, some of which have been Steam Hammer modifications or forks of other bots that I've been working on. The current one is to test a little bit of fun development modification of Steam Hammer for an idea that I had. So it's currently running. It'll probably run for another few weeks, and then I'll pull it and test something else that I find interesting. So,
cool to know. All right, then I think we should wrap up the cast now.
Thank you for having me on. I know I like to ramble and rant a lot. Hopefully,
absolutely no problem. Thanks for being here, and of course you too as well, Antigua.
Yeah. I know people probably get confused. It's Antega or Irulia. I don't know my both names, or my real name's Nathan Roth. So, but thank you for having me very much, and pleasure talking with everyone, especially Dave. So,
okay, see you next time.